Y'all, the Bayoths World Order, the Ringmakers of Saturn, and the Death Star. Hey, everybody, Rec Bear, how the heck are you? Beautiful day out here today in Southern Colorado. We've got the whiteboard behind me during a live presentation just a little while ago. The power went out, so in that flow of thought, we ended up having to go for round two here. So if you missed part one, you definitely want to watch it if you're interested in this sort of thing. I think you'll be impressed, and it should offer some new insights into the ancient mythological scriptures and texts, from the Gnostic scriptures to the Greek stories of the gods, as well as the ancient Sumerian and the Bible. So right here behind me, what I've done is essentially decoded y'all the Bayoth, and we're going to look at the Earth before the Younger Dryas event. And we're going to see how much of this ancient mythology correlates with modern entertainment, which is quite interesting. Many of the blockbuster films, TV shows have a certain underline, a certain blueprint, and they oftentimes create brilliance. But it's something that's just happened so many times in history, and now they portray it on the big screen. But okay, let's talk about this. So y'all the Bayoth is described as the chief archon in the Gnostic text. If you read the Secret Book of John, which is a highly suppressed scripture, the Vatican and a multitude of institutions did a wonderful job suppressing and absorbing all information outside of what they wanted people to see as the lexicon of the world. And there's only, I think, a few actual scriptures left of the Secret Book of John, if that, maybe just a couple, but now you can obviously get the printed version. And if you read through that, it describes how y'all the Bayoth is created, and he's got this like sun head and a snake body. Well, that's representation, or a lion head and a snake body. So that's representation of the lion is the sun, and then the sun connects to the DNA. The sun connects through the kundalini as well. So not only the energy body, but the DNA. But what it is referencing in the Gnostic texts oftentimes is the control, how the snake has control. It's connected to the lion head. And so there was a time when we had a different atmosphere. We had a different environment. We communicated differently. Lord of the Rings might actually be a documentary. And somebody just sent me an email in between this podcast, the most previous one that I just did, saying that Tolkien actually read dozens of books that were like super old. And he was one of the very few people that could actually read these books. I'll pull that up here in a moment because I thought that was quite interesting with some more details on that. But this is where I want to take focus on this for a minute, because The Ringmakers of Saturn, this was written by Norman R. Berggren, and he actually worked at NASA of all places and wrote this book, and they didn't fire him after he wrote this book. It describes his theory, and it does have images of what he believes are these massive spaceships that are creating these rings of Saturn and keep them in a specific frequency range. And he doesn't really get into the reason why, but he shows these images that were taken, and he's like, well, that's a spaceship, that's some type of artificial moon. And there might be something more to this than what a lot of people want to give him credit for. Now, it does kind of have a cult following, and I'm going to take this with a very heavy grain of salt, or a multitude of, you know, like, have an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out on your sidewalk, that the rings of Saturn do have an incredible sound to them and an incredible frequency to them. And I'm thinking of the Eye of Sauron. And I'm thinking of, in the Lord of the Rings, the Eye of Sauron ends up getting all this power, and it sees everything. And it, you know, has these warlocks working for it, and it works through these warlocks, and it works through and influences these goblins and gremlins and monsters. And then you've got like the elves that live for far longer than humans, and these giants and little people. And they have found plenty of evidence of giants and little people, and they're finding new species all the time. They just found a new species, or what they interpret as a new species, in China, archaeologists did, and they say that's going to rewrite history. And several years ago, they found these hobbit-like people in the off the islands in the Philippines. So there's a lot of, oftentimes, bits and pieces of truth in these films and even cartoons and comics and music. And oftentimes, art mimics reality, reality mimics art. So we go back and then we're thinking, okay, so the ringmakers of Saturn, the ringmakers of Saturn. If Shamash, if Saturn is the remains of Shamash, and Shamash was an activated star, and we were connected with this star, and we had a different atmosphere, we had a different environment, we had different gravity, different physics, but, well, you know, just different laws of nature. We communicated telepathically, hence we didn't need to write per se, unless we were creating a sigil or a sigil or some type of symbol for a purpose. We didn't have the weather that we do now. We didn't have the fear of scarcity, of not being able to get water or food. Everything was much more abundant, but there was still war. There was still the duality. It was just a different type of atmosphere. And then you have to question, why are there these people that were born and then they had their heads purposely mutilated so that they would look like they had these pointy heads? Why would they do that unless they were attempting to mimic something that they looked at as a supreme deity or a higher power? And in doing that, what did it actually do to the brain? Did it have an effect? You would absolutely think it would have an effect. I mean, if you've ever had a head injury or studied head injuries or brain trauma, that's some serious manipulation of the brain. So did that actually create new opportunities where they could then communicate and do things in a way that people that didn't have that modification, were they able to do what those that did have the modification done? It's very interesting to think about. But there was another tribe that was just found in Japan recently, about 1,800 years old approximately, of people that had their heads intentionally modified to be like a pointy head. And then if we go back pre-deluge, do we find evidence of the elongated skulls, or is this after the deluge? And the question is, if it's after, okay, or is it after the Younger Dryas event? That's what we need to find out, because there's a lot of data suggesting that there were elongated skulls, not just modified, but also born that way. They're about 3,000, 4,000 years old. Many of these in Peru, of all places. Peru is the key to something. And they're telling us that in films and the Space Force being out there right now, the big time, their connection with the Peruvian government. There's definitely a key in Peru. But many of these people have been found with elongated skulls. And I do not for one second think that those that have an elongated skull are evil or some type of demon, or in a negative light of what most people look at as the Nephilim. Far different, actually. There would be and is good and bad in everything. And those that won, the victors, were probably what we would consider on the dark side, if we were to look at it as like a Star Wars point of thing. But let's go back to the ringmakers of Saturn here for a minute, because the ringmakers of Saturn, you've got these rings that are modified by these massive spaceships. And a lot of people that study the Dyson sphere theory say, how come when we look out in the stars, we don't see hundreds or thousands or millions of these Dyson spheres? Because we should, because that's what a type two civilization would do is harness its own star. And by doing so, it needs to create this massive object of a Dyson sphere. And I'm like, look, that's when you're at a point of, if you've got the technology to create, make something that big, you're not going to make something that big because you won't need to. You could harness the star in a far different way. You need to harness that star by tapping into the Birkeland current that connects to that star. You need to tap into the Birkeland current and harness the energy that way. You could use nanotechnologies and reflective mirrors and all sorts of other avenues that would be almost invisible and use very little matter. I mean, think about it. You would need planets of matter to make a Dyson sphere to go around a star, or a lot of matter. So there's other ways to do it. You could use it with bending light and using lasers and stuff like that. And there'd be far different ways to do it. Or how about the rings of Saturn? Maybe the rings of Saturn have a multitude of purposes. And maybe that's somehow connected to the eye of Sauron, the all-seeing eye. You create, like you use technology to integrate into a star, and you are now harnessing, you are a type two civilization. You are harnessing your star. And by doing that, now you have influenced this solar system so much that this Birkeland current is now tapping into, you've moved it. And now the star that we see is the, you know, our star, the sun. Some type of stargate. So then you go back to Saturn and you look at Iapetus. It looks just like the Death Star. It even has the same blast site on it that the Death Star does in Star Wars. But in this episode, it's Empire Strikes Back and they're rebuilding the Death Star. And then it's got the exact same blast site that if you look at images of Iapetus, it has the exact same location where it looks like multitudes of layers. This thing is made of a multitude of layers. And it's using these hexagons and like a tetrahedron truss type technology. And Richard Hoagland actually did a great breakdown of this years ago. And then Farsight Institute comes out, they remote view it. And Dr. Courtney Brown says it was a resort in their remote viewings, like a resort that you, similar to an Elon Musk at the time. Could be. But I think it's called Death Star for a reason. I think that Iapetus in the Greek mythology was referred to as the Death Star. I think there's a reason for that. I think there's a reason the Death Star in Star Wars looks identical to Iapetus. That is one of the moons around Saturn. Saturn, if it was a star, would have planets that orbited it that now we call moons. Like, well, they're just moons now. Well, Titan, the moon Titan, the Titans, really strong, really powerful giants like in mythology. Well, if you're living on a planet with a much denser gravity, but is still survivable for a life form like us, but much stronger DNA in that aspect. If you look at Titan, it looks Earth-like in many ways. If you look at how many moons orbit Saturn still that we know about, and then you read the mythology of Kronos, and then you find out that the James Webb telescope just captured a star consuming one of its planets. It makes me think of the mythology of Kronos, how Kronos battles Zeus and loses. Before that, Kronos battles his father and wins, which is Uranus, which is tilted on its side. What if we've colonized the solar system before? What if we have colonized this solar system a multitude of times, but there's been these resets, these galactic resets, these battles that aren't just electric universe theory? Because you've got two theories. You've got the electric universe theory, and then you've got the theory of ancient aliens, right? Well, why not both? Why not by messing with nature, nature can fight back, and you can use technology to mess with nature, and then nature can fight back. And then maybe there's cyclical events that take place, like a heartbeat of the universe almost, that just starts everything, that sets everything back to a certain level of suppression with technology, because the universe almost has this fail-safe that once we get to a certain level, bank turns it off again, bank turns it off again, bank turns it off again, And look at how much we can do in that time. Maybe one of the reasons we don't hear about disclosure, maybe one of the reasons they don't tell us about these artifacts publicly anyway, that are on the moon, that are on Mars, that are on Venus and Pluto even, is because then people would realize we've actually colonized this solar system before many times. And it's not just aliens. It's not just little grays walking around. No, very highly advanced civilizations traveling the solar system, mining the solar system, colonizing the solar system. I saw this. You go back when we couldn't fly, or at least, you know, like, okay, we're in a time of medieval times. Okay, imagine living in Europe in medieval times. And you talk about anything that isn't verified by the church or the crown, then you're a heretic. You could get in big trouble. You could get tortured because you've got a demon inside of you that's telling you these things, right? At least that's what they're going to make it sound like. So you can't talk about this kind of stuff. They don't have airplanes back then. Imagine if you said, oh man, there's going to be an airplane in the future. There's going to be this flying thing that takes us from here to the new world, which is beyond the other side of the ocean, which would be America. They've heard stories of it. Or maybe you're just saying, oh, we'll get from here to Denmark. I'm in Germany. I want to go to Denmark. Or you're in England and you want to go to Ireland and you're thinking there's this flying craft that's going to get you there. That's going to be demonic. Or you're going to be looked at like an idiot. Well, then, you know, years later, you got airplanes and you've got cars that go pretty fast. We've got supercomputers that calculate what people are going to do. We can see things on the big screens. We can look up just about anything on our phone. This can translate just about anything. It can predict what you're going to do with a 90%+ accuracy as well. So you take all of that information and then think about what it was like back then. Imagine if you took this back then and they'd be like, wow, man, you're a demon. Well, so then, what's so different to say that in the future, we're going to figure out ways to travel the stars? And maybe not with the science and the physics that we're being taught now. Well, it's been done before. It's going to happen again. Look at these incredible empires on Earth. In Greece and Turkey and Rome. And all around the world, we're finding remains of civilizations that are highly advanced. And then what looks like people trying to mimic those high civilizations. And then just think about the mining involved to get that. And then think about the precision and how you would move it. How would you transport it? How would you build it? How would you design all of that with what we have been told they had access to thousands of years ago? Even with math, even if you're really smart, there's still a missing link there. And this missing link is high technology. And we were highly advanced and before the Younger Dryas event as a civilization, as a global civilization. And most of that got wiped out. Now, the question is, was it wiped out from technology or was it wiped out from cosmic catastrophes or both? And I'm going to say both. So the rings of Saturn could be actually some type of Dyson sphere. The rings of Saturn could be some type of Dyson sphere. Y'all, the Bayoff is not only representing the new sun, because when it ripped away the veil of the old sun, mythologically speaking, we now perceive it as a lion head, as the sun, the DNA. And then you look at the Nephilim and the talk of the fallen angels. They're not fallen angels unless you take the term angels as Anu, Anunnaki, those that came from space and fell to earth. Traveled to Earth because Mars got obliterated, Venus got obliterated, Saturn turned into this highly refined planet that seems to control the solar system from behind the scenes, so refined, so precise, that some say it seems to be almost artificial. Well, nanotechnology that could rewrite itself, that is using cosmic energy in space that would not have the same gravitational effect, that would use radiation as a power source, could build things that would then power these empires. They could come in and out at will. They could be behind the scenes. They could influence our reality through this matrix. They could influence our genetics through thousands of years. They could influence the empires through their thousands and thousands and thousands of years of control, because you have these resets, but some survive and they know about these resets. They survive, they come back, they survive, they pass this information on through the mystery schools and secret societies. And then those, the highest degrees, will learn this. And those even outside of the mystery schools will learn this. And then there's going to be the self-initiated. And then you're going to have the rise and fall of empires all through the times of these people, these puppet masters, these dungeon masters, these influencers that know how the cycles work. There's a reason these 24,500-year cycles of the Zodiac. I mean, how many times did you have to record that before you could say, oh, okay, this Zodiac's 24,500 years. You're going to see Aquarius through this time. You're going to see Libra through this time. You're going to see Gemini through this time. You're going to see Leo through this time. Aquarius, Aries, Scorpio. And how many times did you have to live that and document that before you had it down? Think about that. I mean, just the roads that they've discovered that lead to certain places in the jungle that are incredible. How many people to make those roads? Oh, what? All so we can just walk down the road? Come on, man. It's comical. So you've got human, which is light into matter. Hue is light. It's the sound of God, the sound of divine providence. Human, light into matter. Yaldabaoth, the chief archon, is now connected. I've actually had a hypnosis session once where I got so deep in hypnosis that my the gal that hypnotized me, she's like a professional. She was like the best. She took me so far into this that I could feel Yaldabaoth connected to me, and I'm almost reliving it now, and I'm getting the chills. Like it was connected in the back of my head from a ethereal aspect. And we're all connected to the sun, folks. I mean, think about that. Everybody receives the sun rays. I had a great interview the other day with Jen Zen Pinkstone talking about the neutrinos. And I don't necessarily think that that's what it is, but we've all got this connection. And I've had times in my life where I've been up for days and I've seen people, I've actually seen not horns, but what look like energy horns that go up. Very interesting. And so we are all connected to Yaldabaoth. And now that everything is frequency to a degree, every planet, every star, every constellation emits a certain frequency. And so you've got the blueprint of like your blueprint of your soul. And the reason star charts can be so effective, real star charts, if you know your exact time of date and location, and they can really get a precise idea on what you're going to be good at, what you're going to need to work on. And you can take that, what I believe, into future generations. I think that you can actually take star charts and find out where you're going in the future and where you've been in the past. Then you'll find out it's all simultaneously happening. We're just experiencing it subjectively and linear, kind of. But you've got this, that's why I came up with this. Let's be the chip. Tell me what you think of this verbiage. One quantum at a time. I'm making a difference one quantum at a time. So you've got light into matter that we talked about, the 365 demons, 365 angels, the 365 days of the year, 365 demons and angels made Adam. Each limb is connected to a certain deity or demon or angel. You can read about that in the secret book of John. You control the calendar, you control the people. But when this changed, this also is connected to the sun, right? Because the sun is connected to the 365 days of the year. Think about that for a minute. So there's another verification that Yaldabaoth is representation of the sun and the sun and the DNA and the connection at the ethereal level, your spark. And then you've heard that the only way out of this place is through the sun. Like that's the Stargate, that's where your body leaves. Or you may go back into another planetary realm. You very well could go to another planet, another realm. But notice how the solar system itself, I mean, if you look at the solar system itself, the solar system, our solar system, the whole solar system has been colonized a multitude of times. And we are we're starting that cycle again. But guess what? This solar system reminds me of like a cell, like an actual living cell in somebody's body at the cellular level. It has it's like a bubble. It's enclosed with some kind of frequency. And that's another thing about this story of how something was trapped in this solar system. And that is a lot of what the ancients were talking about, is how to get out of this solar system, or where you would go based upon your energies, your frequency. Your frequency will take you to your path. So then we've got the Golden Age, the purple skies, telepathic, dinosaurs, dragons. You know, I mean, it's kind of the same thing if you think about it, really, if you look at it. Some of them, there's different ones, but how many of the dragons or how many of the dinosaurs that we're looking at now are just a combination of bones that they put together, and they're like, oh, we've got this dinosaur and this dinosaur. Maybe we'll get funding if we come up with another dinosaur. We'll just mix these bones together. Look at this dinosaur. This dinosaur was called the Ocalocopops. Yeah, this dinosaur had multiple tentacles coming out of its forehead, had small arms and big legs. It was called the Ocalocopops. Very powerful. It was an amphimorphous creature that would come in and out, and we estimate it's about 455 million years old, not 454 million years old. So we need another $1 million to verify that million-year difference. Oh, what? Dinosaurs with humans? No. No, there weren't statues of 7,000-year-old bipedal reptoids that were like doing genetic engineering on people. That would freak people out. Don't let them know they were made by reptoids. Then you'll really freak them out. People find out that reptoids made them thousands of years ago, then they're really going to trip. Don't tell them that. Just show them lots of scary movies. Tell them aliens come from outer space. Outer space, that's it. Like, you've got these aliens that colonize this part in the solar system, and then, no, what happens is they get really smart, a planet that they can get really smart and build these incredible technologies, and they're like, hey, let's figure out a way to go to that one. Let's go to that one. And they just blast off. So this spore of DNA, we're unique, but we're also abundant, and we are all throughout the universe. So the Nephilim, let's talk about this. Meteors and impacts. Why are meteors so important? Why is it that kings and queens and dynasties have these pieces of meteors, and then they've got religions surrounding meteors? Well, it's because sometimes these meteors can create major change, and these cosmic influences can create major modifications and change, and there's stuff on these meteors. So there's something there with the cosmic interference and evolution. And then there's also, it appears that during these cataclysmic times, these technological beings appear, and some of them for their own interests, and some of them for our interests, and many of them are win-win interests. The Baltic Sea UFO, the Millennium Falcon, same thing. It looks identical to the Millennium Falcon, the Baltic Sea UFO. Most of the UFOs come from lakes, deep lakes, or oceans. My friend that used to work at the DOD saw one pop out of Crater Lake and went bang, bang. Oh, look. Seriously? It's doing it again. Wow. Hi, I'm Rex Baer. Okay. So then we've got the, that's weird, man. Okay. The Jedi. High technology, cranial modification, high hat. Leave it at that. Sky people, giants, little people, inner earth, colonized solar system. Was it a war or cataclysm from above that created this asteroid belt? What blew up Tiamat? How did the asteroid belt get there? Is it just from the Valley Marineris? Is it high technology? The thunderbolt of the gods? Are those lightning bolts from planetary discharge, from comets, from asteroids? Or are the thunderbolt of the gods high technology? And you know what? I go back and forth here. I'll go towards the EU side and be like, okay, I get it. Yeah, it was just this massive lightning bolt that came out of a planet and it blew up another planet. I'm starting to question that. I'm starting to wonder, like, are these thunderbolts from a high technology? I had an interview with a guy from Israel a few years ago, super bright. I haven't heard from him in years. I hope he's doing okay. And I think he lives in Tel Aviv. And he taught classes on nuclear technologies, and he was describing Gen 5 stuff, that something the size of a bowling ball could essentially be powerful enough to create an asteroid belt. And I was like, wow, that's, so could you imagine? I mean, if we're at that level, even if it's just in theory, if we could write it up, the mathematics on something at that level, where we are currently, what were they doing previously in previous cycles? And how far were their technologies? I would say way above and beyond what most people give them credit for, even though it's right in front of them. Iapetus was literally called the Death Star by the ancient Greeks. Iapetus looks identical to the Death Star. Iapetus could very well be, or could have been, a Death Star. And that's what I believe it was. I believe it was created to destroy planets. And I think they have a bunch of them, but most of them got destroyed and they're very old. So imagine now you have the ability as a society to go travel to one of those different moons, like Iapetus. You go to there and then you could reverse engineer it or turn it back on. Wouldn't that be a trip? What if there's dormant Death Stars out there? I wouldn't be surprised. But Yalda Bayoth is most likely the sun ripping the veil of the purple skies of a golden age, or what we experience as something taking place in the heavens. So they were writing it down, and then it's been passed on through multiple generations, and they're attempting to describe how they went from a golden age to an age of a lot more opportunities, to put it that way. So the blueprint, the reason the blueprint or your star chart is so important is because when you're born, your energy, like, what if you actually come you are a star, right? You are a star. There is a star trapped in your body. So that is connected somewhere else in the universe. You get put in this solar system, and now you have to go, you're going through all these trials and all these different, you know, different energies and different levels. And then do you stay in here? How long do you stay in here? And when do you get out? When do you actually get a leave? Do you leave through the sun? If you jump out and you go through the moon, does it bring you back? What happens if you go to Saturn? What happens if you go to Mars or Venus? I remember someone told me about this years ago. Very mysterious, very brilliant person. He was way like ahead of what I understood at the time. And I find it quite remarkable where we are today. So pick up Ringmakers of Saturn, pick up the Nag Hammadi scriptures, and have a beautiful day. Remember, this is for entertainment purposes only. Nanu, nanu.